reading from the Bhagavatamrita, chapter 6, part 1, text 76. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Parikshit Uvacha, Tatcha Sri Bhagavan Kritva, Sutam Apyas Sutam Yita, Ajanami Vapakacha, Shoka Vega, Atodavan. Sri Parikshit said, although the personality of Godhead must have heard these words, he pretended he had not. Driven by sorrow, he then inquired from Uddhava as though ignorant. Commentary, not holding Padmavati's suggestion in high esteem, Krishna chose to ignore them. He knew very well what was required of him and what the Brajvasis wanted. But because of sharing the distress of his devotees, he seemed unaware of these things. He responded to his own discomfort by asking for Uddhava's advice. Om Jnanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Taksuram Bhavatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vayagyayu bhakti visampayatnai apayama maradipsamandam upambhriya paradukaduki sanatanastam prabhamastriyami pancha kaupa turubhyascha vipashindu bayevacha pakitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudevaya Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from the Sun Falls, very conducive place, no doubt, conducive for spiritual practice. So, let's kind of get back to the story here and remember we're trying to follow the inner story. It's actually a good study of inner stories and outer stories, or what's happening externally and what's really happening. A good example of that would just be karma, where the external story may be great difficulty and misfortune, and the internal story may be one of great fortune. You know, so someone dying of a horrible disease, but internally, you're fully surrendering to God. So is the story of their misfortune or their fortune? And similarly, within Krishna Lila, sometimes the inner story, sometimes the external story doesn't make sense, and the inner story actually resolves the apparent contradiction. We're going to read something about that today, too. Because there's a discussion of Krishna promising to return to Vrindavan and asking his father to go to Vrindavan. So there's some verses where after Krishna kills Kamsa, he asks his father to go to Vrindavan. He said, now you may go. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in commentary writes, you know, some people who are very strict, you know, say that this is against prema. How can Krishna stay in Vrindavan? So how can Krishna stay in Mathura if he actually loves the Vrijavasis? And how can Nanda Maharaj leave Krishna if he actually loves Krishna? So, very interesting. So sometimes acharyas will even see in verses a literal meaning which doesn't make sense. But when you have the inner meaning, it becomes perfectly clear. In fact, in Rasa, the science of Rasa, the language of love is more powerful when it's not literal. But sometimes, or sometimes a quarrel in a man and a woman is actually an expression of how they exchange love. So here, we're forced to go into the inner story because externally, Krishna seems cruel. Because even though the residents of Vrindavan are near death, so many years, he hasn't returned. What kind of love is that? If you really love someone and they were in so much distress because you're not there, what would one conclude if after a reasonable amount of time you didn't accede to that person's entreaties? What would they think? Okay, they asked you and you didn't come for 6 months, you didn't come for a year, you didn't come for 2 years, 3 years. I think in listening to this, we all have experiences of that where someone says or appears to be our friend, right? But then they don't respond. And usually there's no inner story. They really don't care. But sometimes there's an inner story. Anyway, so we're dealing with that now. And by dealing with it, we actually see the depth of Krishna's love, the residents of Vrindavan. We see the depth of love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna. So in this story of Narada searching for the greatest devotee and trying to find Uddhava, who's by the side of Krishna, who's lying on the porch in this catatonic state in great separation and distress of the residents of Vrindavan. And in this pastime or lila where Rohini, Balaram, Krishna's brother, Padmavati, mother of Kamsa, and kind of like a grandmother, Krishna, comes as Krishna's cousin. Devaki, and there's a discussion that ensued, which Uddhava didn't want to be too loud to disturb Krishna. When you're a servant, you assume the desires of the person you love. If the person you love is sleeping, you assume, you develop a strong desire that everything should be quiet, even if it's good music that you're attached to listening to, you put it off, you sacrifice it. Because you live through that person's desires. And again, someone who loves lives through another person's desires. And we try to love Krishna, we try to love Guru, try to love the Vaishnavas, try to love the family. But if we do, we live through their desires. And what we want is what they want. And what they want is what makes us happy. And that's really where our heart has to go to become purified. It has to go to that platform. And to go to that platform is the most important thing in life. Everything else is secondary. And nothing else is actually going to bring us happiness. Chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is praying to make Krishna's desire our own. In other words, to be his servants. It's a strong prayer. And when you chant, you're putting yourself in that locus, tande, in that position. You're trying to live in that perspective for at least a few hours a day and live there intensely. And if you don't practice living in that perspective during the day, there's little chance that during a specific time in the day called sadhana, there's definitely little or less chance of one living that way at other times during the day. The Buddha is very, very quiet, very quiet. Doesn't want to talk, disturb Krishna. But the other people, they can't help talking about Krishna. Why he does not go back to Vrindavan? If he loves the residents of Vrindavan and they want him, that's what he should want. If they're suffering, that's how he should feel. And there's an argument. And the inner story is they both love Krishna, although some are criticizing him and some are defending him. Some are criticizing him. He doesn't seem to have any feelings. Why isn't he going back? And others are saying, no, you don't understand. It is his inner feeling. I don't know why he's not going back, but his inner feeling is that he loves them so much he can't stop talking about them. Interesting, I just read something yesterday about experience and remembrance. It kind of, some psychologists said there's two selves. One self is the experiencing self, and one self is the remembering self. And he said there are two different selves. He was trying to make a point, something about happiness, but it was kind of interesting. He gave one example of an experiment where someone went through a colonoscopy. I think that's how you pronounce it. So one person, as they were testing him, and they were also psychologically testing him, had experienced much less pain. They even showed a graph. That person experienced much less pain. And another person experienced so much more pain, much more pain, all through the experiment. But at the end of the experiment, patient A, who had less pain, at the very end of the experiment, he experienced pain. And at the very end of the other person's experiment, B, who suffered more, he didn't experience anything. So when they gave a test to both people about the colonoscopy, at the end of the experiment, they gave a test of what was their remembrance. And the one who had much less pain, but pain at the end, his recollection was of much more pain than the other person who suffered much more. So the point is, there's two selves. One is the experiencing self, and what is the remembering self? And the happiness dichotomy dealing with both. They also gave an example of people who live in Ohio and people who live in California. And they get the experience of people who lived in Ohio that moved to California. So they said the experience of happiness of both was the same. Believe it or not, people who live in Ohio are just as happy as people who live in California. And why should people in California be happy? Because of the climate. They gave an example, and they did an experiment. That wasn't the experience of life. The experience of happiness was the same. But the story or remembering self, the happiness was higher in California for those people that moved, because they remembered the cold in Ohio. So there's some type, this dichotomy is seen, that there's sometimes a difference. Maybe a little bit off track. I could have went further with that because I was studying it a little bit more. But so what happens now is we're trying to find out, you know, what actually is Krishna's position of love for them if he does not go back? What is his position of love? So when Krishna wakes up, and then he's meditating on it. And externally, it seems he has a change of heart. And his love for the Brijvasis is now being expressed to everyone in the sense that he's remorseful, he's repenting. My heart must be made of diamond. How did I not feel for them? And I must be a cruel person, and I must do something. And he asked Uddhava, you just tell me, what should I do? So Devaki, again, the inner story is her deep love for Krishna, Krishna's mother. She explodes in a loving feeling. It's almost kind of an apprehension, a fear that a mother has that's an expression of their love. What if Uddhava, mothers always worry, what if Uddhava tells Krishna, just go back? I can't tolerate that. So Devaki just breaks in and says, just give them whatever they want. Give them whatever they want. That's her expression of love. Now, Padmavati, who is the mother of Kamsa, and kind of the some type of grandmother of Krishna, as their cousins, she becomes worried because somehow or other there's people like Chitila and Padmavati that play a role in the Leela that is antagonistic to Krishna, but also is actually in the service of love. Just like Chitila, Krishna always wants to meet Radha. And Radha lives in her ancestral, Sri Radha lives in the ancestral village of Jawit, along with the other Mundris and Duckies. And that's about a 35-minute walk from Nandagram. Nandagram is in the middle, I think about a 30-minute walk on either side. The hill of Nandishwara is where Krishna resides. And you look 30 minutes one direction, on a clear day, you'll see the four-headed hill, Lord Brahma, where Srimati Radharani lives 6 months of the year. And then you look to the other side, about a 30-minute walk, you'll see Jawat, where Radharani moved when she got married. And of course, between Jawat, where Radharani got married, and Nandagram is Kher Kadamba is the place where Krishna would take his cows to pasture. It is still one of the most beautiful places in all of Braj. I go there when I'm in Vrindavan. It's just an out-of-otherworldly experience. And on Gopastami, the day where Krishna takes out the cows, the first day when he goes from Komara before 5 to Pokanda, then on that particular day, to this day, all the residents of Nandagram take their thousands and thousands of cows to Kher Kadamba. They have a big festival and a feast there. So, in Jawat, Krishna's mother-in-law, the mother of Abhimanyu, the mother-in-law of Radharani, not Krishna's mother-in-law, excuse me, but the mother-in-law of Radha. She is always antagonistic towards Krishna because she knows that on any pretext, Krishna is going to meet with the wife of her daughter. So she prevents an obstacle, but the nature of these pastimes, the outer story is that there's an obstacle, but the inner story is that the obstacle is increasing, the risk is increasing the love 100-fold. Padmavati, who's the mother of Kamsa, has that kind of antagonistic role that somehow or other serves the rasa, serves the flavor of love. So now she becomes selfishly worried that Krishna, giving them what they want, and listening to Devaki, giving them what they want, that Krishna could say, well, take our whole kingdom. So Bhagavati says, no, don't do that. Pay them off. Having lived for 11 years in Vrindavan, just pay them, or Krishna, just pay them off. Having lived having lived 11 years. And then if you remember in the last class, they were trying to reconcile because they're trying to figure out, was Krishna 11 years when he left Vrindavan at the beginning of the pinnacle of his youth to enjoy with the gopis, or was he at the age of 15, the actual pinnacle of youth? So there was a discussion, and those who tried to say that Krishna was 11, the dominance of them, they were reconciling the Krishna when he just went to Mathura. He's described as looking a little bit older than 11. And they reconciled that by saying, well, Krishna gave up his youth, not in terms of his age, but in terms of going out in the world and having this to fight Kamsa. So his mood was in a higher level of maturity. But actually, he's only 11. And when Krishna tells his parents, tells Devaki, meeting them in a very feeling sequence, that, you know, it's so unfortunate you miss my youth. He's not saying that you miss my youth because I'm 15 now. He's saying, no, you miss my youth because now that I'm here, I can't frolic in the fields of Vrindavan. I can't play with my friends. I can only have to do the business at hand, which is killing the demons. But then Divamangala Thakur, and that was described so nicely, he describes Krishna as 15 in the full-blown youth in his descriptions of Krishna in the intimate association of Srimati Radharani. So he describes him in that way. But the reconciliation for that point is that the examples of Krishna coming to Mathura or the examples in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan of him appearing so youthful, that's because he's so gentle. Krishna is not 15 years old with 5 o'clock shadow. He still looks youthful. He still looks youthful. Okay, now today's verse, Cricket said, all the personality of God have heard these words, he pretended he's not. Driven by sorrow, he then inquired from Uddhava, as though ignorant. So he has to ask Uddhava's advice, and therefore you could see the position of Uddhava. When you accept someone's advice, there's a certain trust. Trust is the basis of any relationship. Therefore, among Vaishnavas, which is a practice dealing with the heart, this is cultivating the heart, but they try to live a life of love. They try to live a life of love. And a life of love means sharing. Sharing loving exchanges, which are described as dati, pitigrinati, giving gifts and accepting gifts. And it's nice, in Vaishnavism, it just doesn't have to be a wedding or a birthday. don't have to wait for special occasions. I'm looking at my altar and appreciating some of the gifts that were given. Hope some people have the gifts that were given by me, but I'm appreciating them. Beautiful picture of the cow in Vrindavan at Frank Kishore's farm. Beautiful painting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Viyamatyachi. And then Viyamatyachi Pritchard, of course, giving Bhute Bhojitecha, giving Prasad, accepting Prasad. But Guyamagachi Prichiti, we all have deep relationships with devotees that we can reveal our minds and accept counsel and trust. And we should have increasingly relationships where we can explain things with a feeling of acceptance and faith. And Buddha has that relationship with Krishna. He's a friend. And they share very intimately. The Supreme Lord said, O best of learned scholars, you know all the thoughts of the residents of Vraja. Please tell me without delay what is that they desire. So, now Krishna is saying, just, okay, what are their thoughts? I just want to help them. What do they desire? Now Krishna is asking that in a very selfless way. But because Devaki said, whatever they want, whatever they desire, give them. When Buddha hears Krishna saying this, he's shocked. He's thinking that Krishna is saying, okay, Krishna is saying, give them whatever they desire out of love. But Buddha's thinking Krishna is just saying, just, you know, okay, bribe them, give them whatever they desire. So Buddha, you'll see, he becomes a little bit, says, Buddha, having heard these words from the Lord, respondent Uddhava was taken aback. He sighed briefly and then answered full of remorse. So Uddhava is compassionate. He thinks now Krishna is going to neglect them. And you can see in the story, it's all focused on the gopis and their, we're feeling, because Krishna neglecting them just makes us think more how much it's irresponsible is how much the gopis love Krishna. How much the gopis love Krishna. And this is Leela. There's these bhavas. The inner story is this exchange between Krishna and his devotees. It's Krishna tasting his bhakti-anand, the ecstasy of devotion, which is his highest pleasure. That's how the world is constructed. That's the ultimate reality. It's the absolute reality. Having this potency of bliss, the essence of which is bhakti, and enjoying it through the vehicle of the devotee, who participating in the pleasure of the absolute reality enjoys as much or more that same bliss potency called bhakti. Commentary. This inquiry stems from Mother Devaki's proposal to offer the Vrajvasis whatever they want. Krishna understands that no presentation of gifts will placate the devotees in Vraja. Since all they want from him is that he grace them with his presence. By approaching Uddhava for counsel, however, Krishna is able to free himself from the responsibility for the decision. If Uddhava advises him to go to Vrindavan, and no one will be able to stop him, and then no one will be able to stop him. What first drove Krishna to inquire with his anxiety, but now his second reason for taking his opinion had come to Krishna's mind. So, having heard these words, Spandit was taken back, he sighed, and then answered with remorse, commentary. In the extreme ecstasy of praying, this state of affairs invoked Buddha's discrimination failed him. So how does discrimination fail him? Buddha is, we may know Krishna's father, Vasudeva. Uddhava. We may know people that have incredibly sharp intelligence that just works at such a higher level to us. It's like a chess master. When he sees that board, he sees 16 moves ahead and knows all the combinations of things that can happen. Well, there are people that are so brilliant and astute and has some type of empowerment or karma in that way, see life in that way. They can see 16 moves ahead and they have that vision. And when they talk to you, it almost seems like mystic potency, how they knew, how they can figure out things, how can they advise. So that was Uddhava. That was Uddhava. And therefore, should have figured this out in a second. He doesn't make mistakes like that. Krishna says, do whatever you desire. Krishna is saying, tell me what the Brajvasis want. Give them whatever they desire. No, find out what they want. Just don't give them what they desire, mean the material things in life. That's ridiculous. He should have figured this out, but instead he's just shaken. How is Krishna so cruel? And that's also out of his love, his ecstasy. Discrimination sometimes fails. Not recognizing the intended meaning of Krishna's statement that he wanted to visit Raja, Uddhava instead took Krishna's words at face value and thought he wanted to placate his devotees with gifts. Thus, Uddhava thought that Krishna, although all-knowing and supremely merciful, wanted to continue deceiving the Vrajvasis. Uddhava was discouraged to see Krishna behaving like this with his loving devotees. Srimad Uddhava, one or two more verses. Srimad Uddhava Uvacha, Raja Rajeshwarata Vibhutir Adivya Vastuni Chate Bhavata Nakamayante Yad Api Akinchit Anutracha Prapyam Yate Bhavantam. Srimad Uddhava said, the people of Raja don't want from you the power and wealth of empress, nor the enjoyments found in heaven, nor anything else obtainable in this world or next. They desire nothing else but you. Yeah, that's love. If you actually love someone, they're more important than anything. It's like the gopis. Krishna is their life. Without Krishna, they have no life. A meat torment and depression and anxiety burning in their hearts when they're not with Krishna. Of course, again, the inner life is that it's love, which is the highest pleasure. kindly flavor me with your attention. Think over what I'm about to say, then act as you see fit. So now, you know, Luther, now he has to think in discrimination. He has to think very carefully now. But if he doesn't like what he thinks that he heard Krishna say, is asking him. So he's thinking very carefully. And he advises, think over what I'm about to say, and then act as you see fit. So he sees Krishna is his authority, but he's doing something wrong. Now he has to give him good advice, but because he's in a subordinate position, he can't order him. So he just tells him, abhidhana prasadata priyatam. Favor me with your attention. And then the child, after pondering, then yata uchitam. Then after pondering, then yata uchitam. Then you act as suitable. But first ponder. So here's what's happening. Is you're telling me you want to bribe them? Well, this is what's happened. Before, when the cowherds met Nanda and saw the jewels and other gifts you had sent with him, they spoke with one another, and all of them immersed in an ocean of fear. Buddha is saying, look, you did this stuff before. Now you want to do it again? I'll tell you what happened the last time. They want to send me back with some jewels to pacify them. But do you remember when you left Raj with your father, Nanda Maharaj? And then before Nanda Maharaj left, but returned, he just said, here's some jewels for them. Remember what happened? He's going to describe what happened. How would you feel if you love someone so much, you know, and they were someplace else, having another life, and then you're begging and begging and begging them to come back, that you're near death, you're on your deathbed, and they try to buy you off their gift. Throw a lap at them. Throw 100,000, You'd feel that so insulting. So insulting. Before, when the cowherds met Nanda and saw the jewels and other gifts you had sent with him, they spoke with one another, all of them immersed in an ocean of grief. Commentary, the event Buddha is narrating occurred just after Krishna killed Kamsa. The jewelry Krishna sent was meant mainly for the women of Braj, the older gopis headed by Mother Yasoda and the younger gopis headed by Sri Radhika. Buddha, however, does not here disclose this confidential fact. Okay, so he sent gifts, but mainly for the ladies. Oh, how very painful. Aho bhata mahakashtam. Oh, very painful. I am weak. How very painful. Krishna now thinks we want such presents for him and deserve this kind of mercy. How painful. Krishna thinks what we want is money. He thinks that's our relationship with him and we'll be satisfied. He just sends money. What does he think of our love? Commentary, Krishna seems to have changed his attitude towards the Vrijvasis. Previously, he would never have treated them in an apparently uncaring way. That's what they're thinking. Therefore, damn our lives and the breath damn our life and the breath that still moves in our throats, and damn Nanda and the cowherd man. They should have left these things behind and instead brought Krishna. So the famous words, damn, which is big, 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 damn, damn. So, damn, Nanda, damn, Nanda Gopan, Chadig dig yay. Damn Nanda. Damn the gopas. Chakva etani. They should have, leaving these things, beyond, they should have brought Krishna. So that's what they felt. Ananda being the bearer of gifts instead of Krishna. Abandoned by Krishna, the devotees of Vraj lived on the verge of death. Still, they condemn themselves for shamelessly holding on to the last breath of life in their throats when Krishna was absent. Affectionate Nanda, of course, could hardly have refused anything his son desired, but he should not have expected the Vrajvasis to be satisfied with Krishna's material gifts. Ananda should have known. And now we go, the gopis, the residents of Vrindavan, they said, damn us. Damn us. A breath that still moves in our throats. That we're shamelessly alive in the absence of Krishna. If we love Krishna and he won't come back, shame that we're alive, living, and shame on you, Nanda, for thinking that you could cure our distress by paying us off. Thus, the residents of Vraj, including your mother Yasoda, gave up all hope of your return. Already dead, they now refuse to eat at all. So this was their condition, catatonic. Who would have actually saw that? They refused to eat. They couldn't do anything. Nanda felt like someone who has committed a great offense, and for 3 days he was so utterly miserable he couldn't say a thing. But then, to save the lives of the residents of Vraja, he induced those people to believe your departing words. With many ardent promises, Nanda skillfully used logic to prove your words true. In this way, he placated the Vrajavasis. Because Krishna had given those words to Nanda. So he didn't only give him the gifts, he also gave him the words. And then Nanda, being a good father, having faith in his son, was able to convince them, of his honesty. He was actually able to convince them of his honesty. And then, again, feeling the gifts out of love, they treasured them. Which shows you that it's not an object that's treasured. It's also the history of the object that's treasured. Is the object love, or is the object business? Just like you get food cooked out of love is different from food purchased.
at a restaurant. There's a different story behind it. So there's a different story now behind it. These objects are actually in that same shape, same form, but so much more valuable when the things you have are an expression of love. Therefore, someone can be so wealthy but have no love, and he may have so many things about around his house, but all he purchased himself. And he will not be able to cherish his house as much as a simple old grandmother who really instilled in her grandchildren deep love, and her house is filled with objects from people who loved and respected the person. Maybe even she was a teacher and there were things from her students. And this is why Braja Vrindavan is so nice. Braja is the land of love. It's not just objects, but they're objects of love. Somehow Nanda is able to pacify them. Okay, we'll stop here. Anybody like to say hello or ask a question? First, we'll see if there are any questions. Anybody like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Okay, Gail, were you able to hear my class?
Yes.
Okay, no,
I'm sorry,
Krishna. What's that?
That's somebody else.
Okay, you don't have a question. Okay, so.
I do have a question.
Okay, ask your question. And then,
okay.
Yeah.
My question is this. First, Uddhava, you say, was so super intelligent, but out of love, his intelligence failed. And I just have trouble with his intelligence failing in a way that resulted in his seeing the person that he loves in such a cruel light, you know? And one other thing, I was surprised to hear that Devaki did not realize, you know, what the gopis really wanted, and she told, you know, she instructed that Krishna, the gopis should be given whatever they want. I thought that she would have understood what the gopis really wanted.
Well, first of all, you have to understand, and this is prema. So there is an intense amount of emotion going on here. And this is Devaki, the mother, fearful that she is her son. And basically, she tells Krishna to pay him off. That's all. That's what she's basically saying. You know, just pay them off.
Well, her love is clouding her mind?
What's that?
Her love is clouding her mind?
Her love is, her emotions are increasing her love. And some emotions are emotions of bewilderment out of expressions of love. In other words, in that kind of world, everything is happening to churn people's affection to the highest degree for the purpose of rasa, which is the highest pleasure. So out of the love of a person comes so many emotions, just like an ocean has waves. And the waves appear to increase the ocean, so the emotions increase the feeling. So some of those feelings can be disparagement, near death, depression, anxiety, fear, jubilation, and there's all kinds of shades. So sometimes out of love, yoga maya, is also there. But the love is the impetus for the emotion. Even just Uddhava. Didn't we see when Uddhava first, when Krishna was glorifying him, Uddhava thought of better devotees, and then he felt envious, and then he felt humble? They're contradictory emotions. But they're all based on the love for Krishna. And there's lila, and there's pastime. And so that's with Devaki. And in terms of Uddhava, it's the same thing. He's just, when you're in a very deep emotional state, you tend to react without thinking. You tend to react without thinking. Just like when Madhu Mangal was asked to chase away the bee that was disturbing Radha and Krishna when they were sitting in Prem Sarovar, and then said that Madhu is gone. Radharani immediately took that as Krishna. Even though from an intellectual standpoint, she laughed. And Madhu Mangal was told, so she just heard that. So that's the nature. So in this type of world, which is controlled by Yogamaya and Shakti and the pastime potency, just a little something can bewilder one. But it's born of love. Because of love for Krishna, they become bewildered. And Uddhava was in an extremely deep emotional state now, because he's Krishna's advisor, and he sees Krishna in distress. He has a very intimate role. He doesn't have to see Krishna as free to love him. He sees Krishna, it's some divinity, but it's mixed with some kind of friendship. And therefore, in friendship, you're equals. So Uddhava has some sense of that, too. So he can also see the human aspect of Krishna. The human aspect of Krishna means that he sheds his divinity. And he does things like steal butter and other things that whatever he does, he cries. And has so many emotions, not all cognizant, all aware. He's mudgata, he's forgetful, and he's sarvajna, all knowing at the same time, depending on what suits Rasa. You want to think of that, Jill?
Yeah, I guess you're just basically saying, you know, their love is so deep, they're not thinking straight.
Yes, thank you. That's right, you said that at the beginning, but thank you, Gail. Thank you so much. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hello, Maharaj.
Mother in
Charge. Please accept my humble wishes.
Mother Indrani?
Yes. I thank you for class so much.
Yeah, I'm up here in my place. And the blessing is I can chant all day and write and, you know, so it seems to be a more conducive place for me to give these classes. Sometimes, you know, I was preaching someplace and up the night before and then, you know, but nice, you can get up early, do a lot of chanting and then, yeah. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? I heard Ami is there.
And, yes, Maharaj, accept my humble obeisance. Same question.
Yeah. What's your question?
I wonder if we can find out if the devotee from Germany is coming and when in September she would want to come.
Oh, let's talk about this probably right now. I'll call you right after the class, okay? Okay, Amir?
Yes, can I call you later because I'm on my way to the Bhakti Center? I'll be in the subway.
I'm here all a day, so just call me and we'll
we'll
okay, great.
That, okay? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mara. Thank you, and thank you for
coming. I'll wait for your call. I'd like to get that done today. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
That's something else also, okay? Any of you in the city, I have a program on next Sunday at that Yoga Maya studio.
Oh, all right, great.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
What time is it?
Actually, I have that on my calendar.
What time is the
building?
What time?
That's 6 o'clock. Who is that?
Gail.
Yeah, it's 6 o'clock in the evening.
On Sunday.
Yes, the 15th.
Yeah, Sunday. Yeah.
15th. Okay, wonderful.
I forgot the address, but yeah, anybody like to come? It's usually very, the audience makes it very nice lecture, I think. Okay. Everybody, yeah, I think people who are devotees, I think, will also appreciate the lectures. They're not just for new people, they're relevant, practical information. I'm going to speak on environment, on consciousness, but it's an interesting day. And we'll also have Kirtan Kasakinchana will be there with me. So, okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Haribol Maharaj, Chaitanya Priya.
Hare Krishna, Chaitanya Priya. Hope everything is going well. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Bharati.
Hare Krishna, thank you for listening here. And maybe I'll stop by again when I'm in New Jersey. We'll try to look at my schedule at your place. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Shastra.
Yes, Maharaj. Hare Krishna. Great class.
Yeah, I'll share with you others in this, and it was a real nice scene. The other day, I took lunch with Satsrut Maharaj, Shamdas, and Mother Kalini.
Wow.
And Shamdas and Satsrut Maharaj really got along. It was really sweet. It was really nice. But, okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj Jaini Tai here. I'm sorry I didn't call you back yesterday.
Okay. I'm going to send you something I'm writing that I'd like you to see in the next day or two. Probably,
okay.
Just a few comments. So maybe you'll be
sure.
Free tomorrow. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for listening on the Sangha.
Always.
Thank you. It's so nice, that I can. In the modern world, I guess, they say remove the form with the form. At least the technology could serve that I can give class regularly, which is really my thing that I like to do. Yukta Vairagya, you have to use things as much as necessary, not more. So try to be careful how you use media too. And be distracting. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, thank you all.